Hi, I'm Kyle on episode 467 of the MWA podcast. Sean, Mark, Brian, and myself are asking Robert Plenai the five questions. And if you haven't already, be sure to check out Robert's interview on episode 466. And did I get that pronunciation right the second time?
Pretty close.
Pretty close. Plenai, Plenai.
There you go.
I missed the L. And,
you know. I think you just emphasized Nye, Plenai, like a little too much. Like,
yeah, like, probably. You know,
Bill Nye, Toll Nye.
There you go. Hey, Toll Nye, the science guy.
All right. Sorry about that, Rob. But, you know, if I don't mispronounce your name, then you're not family. But anyway, moving right along. So, Sean, do we have a Patreon shout out for this episode?
We do. You know, we always like to give the big shout out to our Patreon supporters today. We're giving that shout out to friend and common multiple time guest of the show, Brian Brazil. If you don't know who Brian is, drive to Rhode Island. You're bound to bump into him. It's a small state. If you would like to join Brian in his support of our podcast, go to patreon.com/MWA podcast.
Thanks so much, Brian. Fantastic. Well, so let's move on to the five questions. So Sean, why don't you start us out?
Let's do it. So what is your favorite tool?
I met Rusty Chernis and we have a group called Bench Talk 101. I said, you know, I'm going to be taking a cheer class and Rusty. And so Rusty offered to make me a wonderful spoke shave. Super great tool. Never had a spoke shave like that before. Always had like a metal body one to start. And what a difference it makes. It's a joy to use, and having something made for you by a tool, someone who makes tools, it's really neat to support. And it cuts like butter, and it works beautifully, and really different to use.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I know when we had Rusty on our program, he mentioned he showed that his spoke shave design to Greg Pennington, and Greg was like, yeah, this is good. So that is fantastic. Oh, that is great.
Nice one.
Yeah, spoke shave is a pretty common favorite tool. Maybe because we talked to a lot of chair makers, but it's such a handy, versatile, compact, bang for your buck tool.
You can use it for flat work too. Mm-hmm. So, when you're working with curves on a piece of furniture, it's very versatile. And it takes end grain off. So if you want to kind of make a drawer pull, really neat to use that tool for that purpose. I'm sorry, Mark.
I was just going to say, I took my first chair class with Jeff, and, that was the first time I really used a spoke shave. And, I came home and didn't make another chair for several months, but I used that spoke shave a lot in my work. I was making the chops for the workbenches, and the spoke shave was really good for doing the top where the curve is. And, so I can see why people love using it. Once you get the hang of it, it's a really hard tool to put down.
Yep. I agree. And I'm starting to get into these scraper shaves since I got that Travis scraper from the Windsor Workshop, James Purcell's one. And I went, I need to delve into this a little bit more because that's a neat tool. It's a neat tool.
You've got all the Travishers you need, so just move on to the next tool that you can collect, right?
Exactly. You know, Yeah, a few Travishers.
A few. As he's carrying the one in his head.
Exactly. No, not that many.
I'm
at five, but you know, five.
Admitting it's the first step of the process.
Exactly. Absolutely. So I just need to move on to something else more.
That little baked potato of a Travisher from Marcel's great to use.
Oh, those are great. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's replaced a Scorp with mine, and I have a great Scorp, and I'm like, am I going to use this again? But, you know, with Mark, I'll look at it lovingly at a distance for a while before I even think about selling that sucker.
All right. Those kind of tools, that's really difficult to sell, and you have to have multiple, you know, from each maker, because you know, it's you get into that, it's it's a slippery slope.
I've become a big fan of a little compass plane that I got from Crown Plane instead of the Travisher.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can get into, I only have one Travisher. I have the basic sweep from Claire back in the day. You know, I got it before the rush. But that compass plane, it'll get into some really tight curves.
Yeah.
It'll remove the material really quickly. So.
Yeah. Is it curved in one direction or both directions?
No, it's compound. So it's, you know,
yeah,
the
both directions. The, yeah.
The blade is ground and the sole is ground.
Yeah. Yeah. I think HNT Gordon makes one of those too. And I've been eyeing
they
that.
Do. For a number. It's a little different.
Yeah.
Sweet. I'm sure it's a totally sweet plane. I was supposed to trade for one of those a while back, but it never happened. But
oh,
yeah. Man. Yeah. Somebody had a spare. They lived in Australia, so they were going to ship one out, but it never happened.
Yeah.
But, Heritage Tool will be at Handworks. Play with
the one. We'll see that. That's one of the things. Speaking of which, that's one of the things I've gone between the Austin Festival and Handworks is I've gone like, okay, which vendor is going to be at which show? Because there are some great vendors that are going to be in Austin that are not at Handworks and vice versa. Man. Yeah.
Yeah. Just ask them up front. Say, hey, you know, would you rather, are you going to be at Handworks? Would you also like to speak at Handworks? Or you want to just wait? You know, I don't know.
Yeah. But
a lot of people to talk to.
Yeah. There's a lot of people, but
keep your credit card under lock. And that's, I think that's smart, especially for you, Kyle, because you're going to both.
yeah, exactly. So, you know,
are you driving to Austin?
Yeah, I'm driving up to Austin.
So. Oh, see, now that's a lot easier to bring tools home in a car than flying. So, you know,
true.
That'll be your excuse if you need one.
Send them back to Ozark with me, and then when you're ready to drive up and visit, take a chair class.
Well, see, like one of the tool makers is Barr. You know, I just talked about their spokeshave, but they sell a number of great tools. In fact, as we're recording this, Chris Schwartz has had a great post about their chisels.
Yeah,
and they're going to be at Austin, but they're not going to be at Handwork. So it's, you know, it's like one of those things. Yeah.
There you go.
Yep. So anyway.
All right, Rob. Question two: who has influenced you the most?
Gosh, that's really tough. Both Kyle Kinzer and Jeff Miller have been really a big influence. When I lived in Chicago, Jeff's aesthetic and his thought and engineering, those are all really great takeaways. And Kyle's got some really neat design aesthetics that, you know, you pick up at the Krenov School. Just really help me to think about my pieces as I go through them and grow in this craft to do better always, and really look at a piece and work through the design and have the little influences and changes that make it unique. They've definitely influenced my work over the years.
Outstanding. Yeah,
for sure. So that was a quick one. So we'll move on to the next. What is your woodworking white whale? And that is to say, what's that one thing you haven't made yet but always wanted to?
Oh, my goodness. I really love...
I'm sure that's a small list, right?
There's only one white whale, though. You got, it's that one.
Yeah, the one. The one
and only thing.
So, you know, I'm not really great at upholstery. I could do some minor stuff, but Finn Jewel's Chieftain Chair, I could never afford a real one. I mean, some of them, they start at like $20,000 and real ones are at like 100,000+. Totally getting to that point where I'd love to build one of those. Working through that leather upholstery, that I think would be a really interesting challenge. I think that's really some of the piece that is, you know, would be challenging for me to work through. I think some of the smaller pieces, and kind of, Wendell Castle's, sculptural pieces go through, you know, and make a sculptured cabinet, that's unique, that was influenced by his work. That would be a lot of fun to do. You'll go through a lot of wood. You know,
and you need one of those robotic router attachment things.
Yeah, power carving. I mean, I think, yeah, you're spitting out a lot of dust. But I think that would be kind of neat to do a larger sculptural piece that was commissioned by, you know, a public organization that would go on display. I think that would really be a neat thing to have to kind of leave for, you know, the next generation, leaving fingerprints. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, a good thing. As you make unique pieces, they're not easily sold. I think that would be a fun project to do. Collaborations with other makers. Love to do pieces with other woodworkers that are challenging. The bigger cabinet with secret drawers. I mean, that would be a blast to do as well. Like hide stuff. Like really, I haven't gotten anything, you know, from the 17th and 18th century. Those are really challenging pieces to make. Carving is definitely an opportunity for me to get better at. I think that's unique in its own.
For sure. I like that your answer to that. Like, what is one thing you haven't made yet? Each thing was like an opportunity to learn, an opportunity to increase your skill set, something I struggle with or something, you know, like that's awesome to always be looking upward, you know, at those challenges and in an inspiring way to improve yourself.
Yeah. And really, I think a lot of times people rip on people for using some of the artists that are out there, like Renoff Cabinet or a Nakashima piece. And I think as artists, you know, it's always a fight between a craftsperson and artist. So that's like a whole other podcast in itself. But we learn by taking pieces and putting your own aesthetic on the piece and changing it to not just the materials that you have, the challenge and the influences and the challenges you have internally that influence your piece as an artist. You, as you start to explore the medium, it really helps you define your own version of work. So I think that's really key as you're, you know, getting into this hobby, that it's okay to one, make mistakes because you're learning, and then two, influencing those makers that have, you know, have come through their craft and building those pieces. As a chair builder, there's not a whole lot of chairs that haven't been built. You know, you can kind of make your own spin, but there's, you know, really what, three forms of chairs that you can build. So, and you can make little changes that are your uniqueness. I think there's a lot of opportunity to make pieces more fluid with the body and more answers those questions of your client, you know, because different body shapes, different places where people have pain or feel comfortable. You know, if you're building a chair, I think Jeff really works with the ergonomics of a chair to really make it comfortable. I think those are really great lessons to listen to the client and make something that maybe they didn't know about would help improve their life in using your piece. I think that's the unique part of building a chair. It's a very intimate piece of furniture where it reacts to you or your body molds to it, one or the other, as you build that chair.
Yeah, cool. That is cool. Well, wait till you see my new design of the wooden beanbag chair.
So, the bag that's wood or the beans?
Everything's made out of wood, you know. You know, I got to do some with those planer shavings.
Oh, you were working on that waterbed chair.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, anyway, so besides my stupid jokes, so what is your biggest stumbling block in woodworking?
Well, I think I had quite a few moves, which slowed down my pace of learning working in the craft. Different challenges with jobs and moving shops several times. Hopefully, at a shop that I could stay at. Unlike some woodworkers who have five or six moves, I've only gone through three. This one's an air conditioned and heated shop, which has plenty of power, which is the first of shops. And I can't tell you, it's so nice to be in a shop and not sweating or not freezing to death. You know, I came from a very humble beginning with a less than one car garage with one light bulb and one outlet.
Yep. And it sounds like you might want to set anchor for a bit if you found it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It would be great to have that. And just personally, I have ADD, and that, you know, having that, trying to stay focused and having, you know, some good days or bad days where you've got other influences in your focus, knowing that that's the day you need to just work with your hands and just know we're cleaning and organizing. And then, you know, when you've got to make cuts, I leave a lot of notes for myself. Post-it notes are my friend. Finding really forgiveness in your work. Gary Rogowski has got some really great podcast about finding forgiveness. That has helped me to grow as an individual, as a woodworker, that, hey, if you make a mistake, it's okay. Maybe you can roast some hot dogs with the mistake.
There you go.
Yep. Yeah. BTUs.
That's the cool thing about BTUs. Woodworking, you know, the worst thing that you could make firewood, right?
Yeah.
Like that's the absolute worst thing that could happen.
Yeah. Cherry makes the best mistakes.
Does anybody build with mesquite? You know,
we do here in Texas.
Build some okay. Fires.
Yeah. Yeah, you build fires. Yeah.
Yeah. Build brisket with that.
Yeah.
Build some bark.
Do we have the annual cutoff festival at the house where they pour my wife a couple of glasses of wine and we go out and sit in the fire? It's been too hot to do it. And I've got a big pile of just shavings and scrap to go out and you know, it's nighttime, you see the stars and you light in a fire and it brings some more joy and just really have a great time. And it's totally okay. Bad prototypes have gone that way too.
Yep.
Oh yes. All right. Awesome. Rob, this has been a great two episodes. But our last question here is how has the internet influenced your work?
Oh my goodness. I got into Instagram and I had no idea that it would be such a great resource and connecting with makers from all over the world. The influence from makers down in South America and Europe, being connected during COVID when things were rough, the Bench Talk group, great supportive individuals, taking online courses, and rather than kind of being bummed out about COVID, I took a lot of courses online from Florida School of Woodworking, Austin School of Woodworking, Fine Woodworking put on a lot. And those resources, wow, talk about escalating your work. Great to have. And I think it influenced my boys to utilize those resources too. And for me, seeing other people find joy in their life during a tough period, I think that for me influenced my work a lot.
Yeah, very cool.
Awesome.
Yeah, that is cool. And we appreciate your support of the podcast.
100%.
All the comments you made and all that kind of stuff, you know, that means a lot to us. So we really appreciate that too.
And I'm on the road a lot. I do outside sales, and it's my favorite podcast to listen to. You guys are great to listen to. You know, I listen to other woodworking podcasts, but this one's my favorite because it's got a lot of chair makers in it.
Wow. Thank you. Thanks, Kyle.
You know? We have our niche. We have our niche.
There's a niche. Yes.
I mean, not to say I don't like flat work, but chairs are really a lot of fun. They're really addictive. You know,
there's a million other podcasts that talk about boxes and drawers and dovetails. Let's,
cabinets.
You know, let's expand our horizons a little bit.
Well, you know, I think the neat thing about this podcast is that you bring in people from all over in the craft. Really cool to listen to the diversity of craft makers. And I think that's what separates you from the other podcast.
Well, thank you.
Well, thank you. We appreciate it.
Indeed.
We strive to do that.
We do.
But speaking of the internet, where can folks find you on the interwebs, Rob?
They can find me at r.tolnai_designs on Facebook, and on Instagram, they can find me at robert.tolnai, T-O-L-N-A-I, and see all my mixture of woodworking and food and the beautiful Southern Illinois area.
Exactly. Yeah, a lot of farmland in that area, too.
Farms, and then you got caves and lots of hiking and forest. Really, it's not flat down here at all.
No.
The Ozarks, which marks is
say, it's the Missouri of Illinois. It's
there it is. There it is.
Southern Illinois. Yeah. Southern Illinois is really beautiful. We have some friends that live in Hoosier, near the Hoosier Forest. It's that's Indiana. Dang it!
Oh, you stayed away.
Southern Indiana, which runs right into Southern Illinois.
Yeah.
It is beautiful country down there.
Yes. And I'm the only one that lives in glacier flattened land where I can see for miles, literally, because there's no elevation change.
it's pretty darn flat where I live.
I guess it is. You're down there at sea level. Yeah, that's sea level.
Sea level.
Flat. Shiny grass.
Unless there's a storm surge that comes through and it's 20 feet higher than everything else.
It's still flat. It's just taller.
All right. Don't tempt the gods there. And speaking of which, Mark, where can folks find you on the interwebs?
You can find me on Instagram at Mark Builds It, or you can watch some videos on chair making of all things at the Joint Effort channel on YouTube, or you can subscribe to my my newsletter at the jointeffort.net. How about you?
Yeah. And I encourage folks to check out the stuff on YouTube. It is absolutely great. And
yes, it is. And
great for what you and Jeff are putting out there. It is fantastic.
Yeah, we're trying to demystify right now. I mean, most recently it was the geometry behind post and rung chairs, and we'll probably get into that again in a little while, but we're going to have to, I'm not sure where we're going next. I got to look through my catalog of material and see what we can talk about next.
Cool.
How about you, Brian?
So Instagram is the place where you can find me. It's Obst Woodworks, and Obst is just simply O-B-S-T. Kyle, how about you?
Well, you got another one out there. You got your Obst, what is it, Outdoors or something?
Oh, yeah, Obst Outdoors. Yeah, I like to do it very similar to you, Rob. I like to hike a lot. I do a lot of kayaking.
Yeah.
I got some feedback that I was polluting my woodworking Instagram with
disgusting outdoor stuff.
I need to start an outdoor page, Brian, and segregate my work. Yeah.
The reason I brought that up because you posted those recent pictures about y'all out there kayaking, and I go, that just looks like a blast.
Yeah. I mean, it was a
kayak, as long as it wasn't like 120 degrees, but you know.
No, it was about 83, something like that.
Oh, that's fantastic.
That water was moving. You couldn't tell those pictures, but we couldn't get up as high as we wanted to. We had to turn around.
Yeah.
Kyle, how about you?
You can always find me at barton.kyle or BB Custom Tools on Instagram or bbcustomtools.com or on YouTube under BB Custom Tools or Kyle Barton. Sean, what about yourself?
Per usual, you can find me at SeanW78.
Hey, I had this thought. Maybe we need to have like a paddle making class here in the Ozarks. And before we make paddles, we all go on a canoe flip trip.
Before or after? Use the paddles.
Before. You go. Well, you can't. You got to finish them. It just takes too much time.
Time to finish.
But, you know, we all go out and float a beautiful gin clear Ozark stream and then get inspired and come back and make paddles.
There you go.
I'd love to do that. Yeah.
You find someone that can, like Zyla Foxland, that can teach you how to make a strip canoe. And
well, that's a different class.
Strip canoes, I'm more good doing
it's time consuming.
Extremely.
Very time consuming, I know.
Yeah, not the strip canoes. What is it? The
inner tube?
No.
There's a skin on frame.
It's a frame.
Really skin on frame. Yeah.
Skin on frame is faster.
Yeah.
Right.
But it's still it's still a lot more work than a paddle.
That's for sure.
But, no,
I wouldn't mind that.
Yeah, I'd be game.
I mean,
that's a
short weekend class, right?
Yeah,
it'd be
3 days, right? You go for the float on the first day. You spend the second day prepping materials and gluing them up, and then the third day shaping.
Yep.
I think we could do this, guys. I think that's a good 3 day weekend class. I need to get thinking on that.
The only downside of that is like, what's your design niche? What's other than the experienced, you know, what makes your paddle better than the other
Nothing.
Ones? It's a hard sell.
It's
right?
a paddle like, that you made.
It's
ergonomics, just, the handle. To contour it to you. I get, you know, that's about your only thing, because the down in the water part. Don't mess with the science. It's there. It's
So you got the first day to see where your blisters develop.
Yes. And he was like, "Oh man, it's a really wear zone. Like it's low in the heel of my hand, and it's really
too hard."
Yeah.
And then on the second day, you're like, "None of that matters. You're just going to build a regular old paddle."
Yep. You know, regular paddle and my gloves.
You just need to do more paddling. That's why you got blisters,
That's it.
Son.
That's it. You're not used to it.
And that just about wraps it up for this show. If you haven't already, please subscribe to the show on the podcatcher of your choice. Just search for the Modern Woodworkers Association. And while you're there, please leave us a review. You can follow us on Instagram at @MWA_podcast. And if you'd like to support the podcast, go over to patreon.com/MWA podcast. But the best thing you can do is tell a friend. Word of mouth goes a long way in sharing our discussion.